My name is Mark R. LePage, and you are listening to Entree Architect Podcast, where each week I speak with inspiring, passionate people who share their knowledge and expertise, all to help you build a better business as a small firm entrepreneur architect. This is episode 334, The Power of Professional Networking Memberships for Real Estate and Design Professionals, with founder of Brick and Wonder, Drew Lang. This episode of Entree Architect Podcast is supported by our platform sponsors, ARCAT, the online resource delivering quality building material information, CAD details, BIM specifications, and so much more for free at ARCAT.com, and Gusto, easy online payroll, benefits, and HR built for modern small businesses like ours. Drew Lang, welcome to Entree Architect Podcast.
Mark, thank you very much for having me. I look forward to the conversation with you.
Me too. I think this is going to be a great conversation. Drew Lang is the principal of Lang Architecture and the founder of Brick and Wonder, a membership community that connects and supports professional leaders in real estate, design, and the built environment. Drew is originally from New Orleans, as they say in New Orleans. He received a Master of Architecture degree at Yale University, and he currently lives in New York City. So Drew, I just gave a little very, very brief overview of who you are and where you've come from. I'd love to dive a little bit deeper into your story, talk about your origin story, talk about where you discovered architecture and what inspired you to become an architect, and share your journey, your origin story.
Sure, I'd be happy to. Thank you for that, Mark. So I grew up in New Orleans, and in retrospect, I can say that it was formative for me. It's a visual place, a sensual place. The thing that I think about most when I think about New Orleans now is the vegetation and the way that the vegetation relates to the built environment there. There's this really palpable competition almost between nature and man there. And yeah, of course, during Katrina, we all saw that manifested. I saw it manifested growing up with all the vegetation growing all over the buildings and, you know, people trying to prevent that from happening. So 18, I went away to college, went to Middlebury College in Vermont, and I studied literature. I didn't know until the end of my stay there that I wanted to delve into architecture. What happened is I came to the end of college and I felt the need to make a decision about a professional direction. And it was a bit of a rational decision, which is, I think, different than the way most people arrive at being an architect. I knew that I was a visual person and wanted to do something in the visual realm. I was also very drawn to business, and so architecture is where I arrived. It made sense to me, this marrying of the creative and the business realm. And so what I started to do is audit architecture classes, and they're mostly architectural history classes. And as I did that, it felt right. It felt good. It felt natural to me. And so I went on from there. And I had 3 years between college and architecture school, which was a test for me, because it's a big decision, right? Going back into graduate school, spending the time and the money to do so, and entering into a profession. So I had 3 years of testing the waters in Los Angeles and in New York, about 18 months in each place. I ended up at Yale, and that was a great experience for me. What I take away from there is a lot of great things and a lot of great relationships. The most formative teacher I had there was Deborah Burke. She was and remains very important for me, very influential. I went into architecture, architecture school, thinking the architect makes big gestures, and came out of school hearing from the likes of Deborah Burke, thinking about it differently, thinking about it in more modest terms, in more everyday terms, to use her word and Stephen Harris's word. They wrote a book called The Architecture of the Everyday. Ended up working for Stephen Harris. Actually went to Deborah after graduating from architecture school and asked her for a job. She wasn't hiring at the time, and said, I think Stephen's hiring, go talk to him. So Stephen Harris is someone else who teaches at Yale. And I worked for him for 5 years, which was a terrific formative experience entering into the profession. And after that, I launched my own firm. So when I launched my own firm, I knew that I wanted to do a mix of client work and development work, self-generated work. The form that the self-generated work took the first years I was in practice was back in New Orleans, because it was an easy point of entry for me. I bought properties, renovated them, and sold them, about a dozen of them over a period of 7 or 8 years. And one at a time, I did it in a way where they were all self-funded, and I didn't have any partners other than people in my family who were there who helped me with logistics, because I wasn't there on the ground. I was doing all of this remotely from New York and flying back and forth. Fast forward to 2007, 2008, coming up on that financial crisis, I had built a firm with a small handful of people, small handful of client commissioned projects, and was doing a mix of development projects down in New Orleans. Well, 2008 hits, and we slowly dwindled down to nothing, literally. And I think I was finishing up one development project in 2009. At that point, all of our client work had dried up, and I had laid off, sadly, everyone in my office. I was back to being just me. At that point, it was a crossroads. What do I do? Either go big in the development direction. That was the choice I was facing. The client work had dried up. Or I closed the office and go get a job in a larger architecture firm or somewhere else. And I decided on the former. I decided to take a big leap and do a larger development project. And that turned out to be the best decision I could have made. And the crisis of 2008 turned out to be a really significant gift to me, because I in all likelihood wouldn't have taken that big leap, at least not that quickly, right? So the large development project I did is called Hudson Woods, and at this point we're finished with that project. It took us a total of 6 or 7 years to complete that project. It's 26 homes in the Catskills on 130 acres, and it was significant success for us. It was a significant success in many ways. We delivered nice returns to our investors. We garnered a lot of attention and drew a lot of new opportunities to us in the form of client commissions, and grew the architecture studio back into a very vibrant place with 10 people in it. That's where we are now. And what we're doing is a mix of client commission work and development work at this point for clients who come to us and ask them to help them with their development projects. Now, we can get into how Brick and Wonder happened or go in a different direction.
Yeah, I have so many questions about the story up to this point. We're definitely going to talk about Brick and Wonder because that's something that is very interesting to me and I want to talk about it. But I'm also fascinated by your story. I love the idea of starting small with development and building, you know, doing those flips, buying houses, renovating them, turning them into something that's more valuable and selling them in order to get started with development. And I think a lot of architects want to take that leap, right? And want to take that small opportunity. But the thing that I really want to focus on is your restart. That you said you dwindled, the firm dwindled down to nothing. It was essentially you had to make a decision between closing the doors and going to work for somebody else or restarting and then deciding what to do with that restart. You had the development experience. You knew that that was something that you enjoyed doing and had this decision to make. The reason I want to focus on that is because that's going to happen in the next year or so with thousands of architects. With this economy that's heading our way, there are going to be many, many firms that dwindle down to nothing and many, many people who lose their jobs. And when things come back, and they will come back bigger and better than they've ever been, many, many architects, thousands of architects throughout the world are going to have to be in that position that you were in of deciding what to do. There's going to be a restart. There's going to be a global restart like we've never seen before because we've literally stopped the world. We're going to have to restart it, and everything is going to be different. So everybody is going to have to make decisions. And so I wanted to just go back to that decision with you, Drew. And what did you do when you were at that point? You were at nothing. It would have been easy to just close the door and go work for somebody else. But not only did you restarted big. A development of 130 acres, 26 homes. Obviously, that takes investment. So you have to go out and talk to people and raise money, and that's a huge thing. Coming out of a massive recession to make a decision like that and go big, I wanted to just talk a little bit more about the mindset that comes with that. So talking to the architects that are preparing for this, that there will be a reset, what type of advice would you say that you could give to those people who are listening to us right now?
Well, everybody needs to make their own decision, of course, and ultimately be at peace with their decision. And the question for me was whether or not I could come to a place that was that mindset shift, okay? Because I was in the doldrums, right? Yeah. I was in a really bad spot. And I was in that spot where nothing was coming in the door for many months. I had a small child at the time and a very, very nervous wife who was asking, why aren't you shutting down? Right? It didn't make sense to her. There's no business coming in, so you don't, therefore don't have a business, right? So pressure is coming from many directions. You know, to reach deep inside myself and of course make a difficult decision. What I found as I thought through it and went out there and explored options is I kept coming back to this idea, this vision, this dream of doing a larger development project, something I really, really wanted to do. And the risk was real on the one hand. On the other hand, it was an abstraction in the way that the future is always an abstraction. You know, all you can do is project to it, and you don't know what it's going to end up being. But I was excited about that. I was energized. And I think that, you know, the question for people, whatever decision they're making, you know, coming out of this crisis or whatever juncture they reach, is what's the place that you really want to go?
Yeah.
What's allowing you to come to a place where there's a meaningful shift, in mindset, right? You mentioned mindset, and I think that's the key. You know, that's what allowed me to do it. And I was, once I decided there was no going back, I was all in. And I gave it my all and followed through on every last detail of the project. That's what we do as architects. That's what we're good at, you know. Architects are very detail oriented. I was very careful to identify the things that I knew I wasn't good at and couldn't do directly myself, and very quickly, very early on, reached out to other people. You know, that's the other key, I think, for people when they're doing difficult things, when they're making big leaps, is not to try and do it on your own. I mean, there's no way I would have ever succeeded if I tried to do everything on my own. I reached out to a lot of really smart, capable, giving people, it turned out. And thankfully, I found that there are a lot of people out there very anxious to give their time and their expertise and help. And they did so graciously and, you know, continued to do so through the process with me. So, it's in a way one of the easier decisions I've ever made. And like I said before, I don't think I would have made that decision. Most certain I wouldn't have had the crisis not occurred, had I not been brought to that juncture. So I'm excited about the current crisis that we're in, Mark, because it's going to bring me in certain ways to junctures where I might not have arrived otherwise. It's going to bring a lot of other people there too. And out of that will come a lot of interesting opportunities, you know? So I'm really interested to see where we go and what places architects go with this, right? There's so many skills that architects bring to bear, right? And it touches so many things in the world, so many disciplines. Building touched everything, you know. And as architects, we know more about buildings than anyone else. We're in a really unique position. I think there are a lot of people out there that are in a very, very unique position to do a lot of important work right now. So I'm very excited about that.
Yeah, I am too. And that's sort of strange to say as we're sort of working our way through this pandemic and the fear and the anxiety that comes along with that. We're all feeling that. But I encourage you who are listening to think that way, to think about the future in terms of opportunity and to look at the future as this amazing gift and this opportunity for us as architects. People all around the world are going to be looking for solutions, right? The whole world is going to change the way we do everything. The way buildings are experienced is going to change from the health situation. So there's opportunities there. There's this whole work from home thing that's not going away. That is a permanent situation. It will obviously go back to brick and mortar and work from home, but that is a permanent change in our society. There are massive opportunities there for architects. And so, and I've said this before in past episodes, don't wait for those things to come. Start developing those ideas now and build the ideas and the infrastructure there to start providing those services. When those people start looking for them, you will be there to be able to provide those things. And so thank you, Drew, for sort of going through your mindset shift and your idea of coming out of the last recession with this big idea and taking the leaps and risks to follow the thing that inside you is saying, this is where you need to go. And sometimes that's what you need to do. You need to listen to what's inside and follow that. And I hear, you know, people make fun of me because I hear voices, but there's something taking me on a path and I just keep going. And Entree Architect is a perfect example of that. What Entree Architect has become is because I've just followed the path before me. I just keep moving in the direction that I think I should move. And I just keep moving and growing, and it just keeps getting bigger and bigger and more positive. We will return to our conversation right after this quick break to say thank you to our platform sponsors here at Entree Architect, Gusto and Arcat. I know what it's like to be an entrepreneur architect because I'm a small firm architect too. I know what it's like to wear all those hats, and some of those hats are great, but some, like filing taxes and running payroll, not so great. That's where Gusto comes in. Gusto makes payroll, taxes, and HR actually easy for small businesses like ours. Fast, simple payroll processing, benefits, and simple management tools all in one place. Gusto automatically pays and files your taxes, so you don't have to worry about it. And when you're ready to add on that health benefits or that 401k for your team, they can do that too. Easy, no stress. Those old school clunky payroll providers just aren't built for the way modern small businesses work, but Gusto is. So let them wear one of your hats so you can do better things, like being an architect. Members of the Entree Architect community receive 3 months free when they run their first payroll. Try a demo today and see for yourself at gusto.com/architect. That's gusto.com/architect. Free for 3 months. gusto.com/architect. Unless you're working for one of the top architecture firms in the world, you know what it's like to work with limited resources. But there's one resource that you can access no matter what size of your business. Arcat.com. Arcat is a free solution for your building product information needs. They offer BIM objects, CAD details, specifications, and a lot more, all directly from leading manufacturers. Research building products and get the information you need all in the same place without paying a cent. So visit Arcat today at arcat.com. That's ARCAT.com. Set them up in your bookmarks or your favorites and make them a regular part of your project workflow. They will help you find the information you need fast and easy and free. That's arcat.com, and let them know that Entree Architect sent you. Arcat.com, your complete source for finding, detailing, and specifying building products. Gusto and Arcat. Please visit our platform sponsors today and thank them for supporting you, the Entree Architect community. I want to talk about Brick and Wonder, because I think that also is a result of all of this, right? So you've grown the firm into Lang Architecture, and you're doing all types of work, focused a lot on development, but you're working with other clients who are doing development. And so where did Brick and Mortar fit into this story? Brick and Wonder fit into your story? How did it come about, and why did you launch it, and what is it?
Mm-hmm.
I know that's a lot of questions. Let's start with the beginning. What is it?
Sure. Well, like Entree Architect, it is a community of professionals that includes architects. Where it's a little different is that it's cross-disciplinary, and it extends across what I think of as the real estate equation, from the business side all the way through to the creative side and back again. So our community includes 40 professional verticals, from real estate investors and developers to real estate brokers, real estate attorneys, lenders, all the way to architects and interior designers, photographers, stylists, marketing specialists. And the reason why I formed a community of this kind is because I found in doing the work that I've done, most specifically our Hudson Woods project, which was an end-to-end project where I had personally all of these touch points across the real estate equation that the success I achieved was entirely due to the alignment of interests between people, the coming together of people successfully in collaboration with one another. You know, and of course it didn't work in every case, right? And when it didn't work, it was when that alignment wasn't there. And so why I formed the Brick and Wonder is to help both myself and my colleagues in a formalized manner come together regularly over time and align our interests, share information, and help one another grow our businesses. Okay, so we do a number of things together. We exist together every day in an online community, and then we, prior to coronavirus, came together physically with one another in sessions. Currently, we're coming together online in Zoom sessions in the form of workshops and roundtables and panel discussions, different formats that promote dialogue, that allow people to meet one another and go away from those sessions and continue dialogues along the lines of shared interests. So you know, the cross-disciplinary aspect of what we're doing is really meant to lead to the different kind of discussions than people would have otherwise. The work that we all do naturally intersects, and I'm interested in those points of intersection and bringing them to bear, bringing them to the surface where they might not otherwise, you know. So
it's such a great idea. It is such a great idea, because that world, our world that we work in with all these different disciplines, it's very often in conflict, right? There's this exploitation of one another in order to get ahead. We're sort of stepping on someone else. And the idea of bringing all of these different design professionals and real estate professionals and investors and support and all of everybody who is involved in the built environment together to not only learn and to have a community and to share knowledge and you know, network and do all the traditional things that we do in networking groups. But when you bring them together on a regular basis, friendships are formed and relationships are formed. And when you build a relationship and you build a friendship, you earn trust and you have knowledge of one another, and that exploitation goes away, right? Now you're friends with them. You have a relationship with them. You look for ways to help support one another, and the entire community starts to grow and starts to blossom. I love that you've developed this community, both online and that you're meeting with one another and doing those kind of things. I think it's so important. And I hope that it's super successful. I hope that, when did you launch it? How long ago did you launch?
Well, we just relaunched. We've tried a few different formats. We started initially 2 years ago. And when we initially launched, we launched broadly, and with the objective of bringing these values and this way of engaging one another to everyone who wanted to engage with each other in this way. Alongside getting together in person, we launched some custom software that we built, which was essentially a project marketplace where we published project opportunities mm-hmm. that the members could come forward and express interest in or refer out to other colleagues in the community, or even refer outside the community to someone. The tests succeeded, the initial tests, in some ways, but they failed in others. And the main way they failed goes to something that you just mentioned, is they went people's relationships went to a place that was too transactional, which was exactly the place that we were trying to avoid. We're trying to bring people to a place where they build alignment and they build meaningful relationships with one another over time. And from those relationships come not only trust, but come opportunities.
Right.
Come new projects, and the growth of people's businesses. You know, of course, that can happen simply through transactions, one at a time, but that's not where my interest lies. And so, because the test failed along those lines, we reset and we relaunched as a much smaller group with more filtering. So we very carefully filter applicants. The founding group invites new people in, and then when people come to us from the outside, they fill out an application. It's a pretty extensive application, give us quite a bit of information about themselves. Then we qualify them in. One of the members of our membership committee gets together with them in person or on the phone or on a video session for a 45-minute call, and we get to know each other, and we ask a series of questions and feel out whether they're a fit for our community, right? Eventually, I do hope we find ways of broadening the community and bringing these values and these ways of engaging with one another to a broader place. But for the time being, we feel like it's important to remain small and to grow slowly and set ourselves up for success. So today we're 100 members, and we're very intentionally distributed evenly across professional verticals. So no one profession outweighs the other, right? We're very much in balance. We feel like that's important in order to keep people's interest and also maintain the community at the level of relationship building and avoid relationships that are based on a transactional dynamic.
Yeah, that's fascinating, because when you launched broadly, you never built the foundation that you just let everybody in, but there was nothing to sort of hold it together. And by sort of relaunching and now building a foundation with a few strong members that with a very specific intent of why you're bringing these people together, you can then build a foundation that can support a much wider community, and then also be able to bring back the software and the transactions, because it sounds like the first launch was built on transactions, and then you were hoping that the community would follow, but it never resulted that way. But by reshifting your focus on the community and building the relationships, now you can bring back the transactional piece of it with a stronger connection among the members.
That's right. I mean, here's the thing: we all know that transactions need to occur. We're all in business, right? And we need to close business. We need to get to that transaction, so to speak. Okay, so we knew from the outset that community and relationships were going to be the heart of what we were doing. What we were testing at first is whether or not we could have transactions out front,
right?
In a transparent platform where everybody could see all the activity occurring around the transaction, right? Together with community dynamics and people building relationships with one another, right? And that's what failed. You know, what succeeded, fortunately, were the community aspects of what we were doing. This is what people loved. The in-person gatherings and the meaningful connections that people developed is what was most appreciated and what people clamored around and wanted more and more of, right? And so as we've relaunched, that's the place that we've focused. And you're exactly right. We're building the foundation right now, and we won't shift gears and move into other aspects of our larger ambitions until we've built that foundation, until we know the values have been broadly embraced by our members and the initial part members of the community, and we're in a really strong place to take our next steps.
Yeah. And right now, as strange as it sounds, it may be perfect timing that with the downturn in the economy and the sort of the uncertainty before us, people are looking for community. People are looking for people that they can connect with and trust. And so people are looking for places like Brick and Wonder and Entree Architect and other places similar that you can, just go and be, human with another human. And out of that relationship, help one another succeed through opportunities and transactions. So I love the fact that you've reset and restarted. I think restart is a theme that we are bringing to Entree Architect. That's something that we're focused on right now and sort of rebuilding the membership and a lot of the content that we're creating with the idea of starting and restarting, that architects are going to have an opportunity in the next few years of having that opportunity like you had with Hudson Woods and that decision that they're going to make, and following that dream and those passions that you have as architects to start and restart. And so it's exciting to hear your story, Drew, with both Lang Architecture and how you restarted Lang Architecture, and then again with Brick and Wonder, sort of starting Brick and Wonder and then restarting Brick and Wonder. It's a theme that I've heard often in the last year or so with architects who have reached success, talking about that previous recession as a turning point, as a tipping point in their careers, and the opportunity that came with getting small again and being able to restart and rebirth their firms and their businesses in a new way. And so it's very exciting to think about the future of the opportunities that architects are going to have. So thank you for coming by here and sharing your story here.
My pleasure, Mark. Yeah, very happy to. Really love what you're doing. And I know people come to you every week, sometimes every day, I'm sure, for a refresh, a restart, to get re-energized. I mean, as you say, these junctures that we reach that are at the moments of crisis with the Great Recession coming out of 2008 and right now in the midst of coronavirus provide these natural junctures for a reset. But we know that we as human beings need resets on a regular basis. You know, it could be a reset every Monday morning, or, a reset every morning that you wake up, or, whatever the case may be. Everyone's a little bit different. But stasis is not good for anyone, right? Not good for human beings. It's not good for businesses. And I know what you're interested in, and with Entree Architect, and what we're interested in with Brick and Wonder is providing people with this forum for energizing themselves and doing so together with other people, because it's very hard to do it on your own in isolation. You know, we can all sit and stew in our own thoughts. We'll only get so far. We can very easily get stuck. Coming together with other people and sharing ideas and being vulnerable with each other. I mean, we're very, very interested in providing a safe place where people can come lay their cards on the table, talk about real problems that they're facing or real ambitions that they have, right?
Yeah.
Lay that on the line and learn and grow, right? This is what we're interested in.
Yeah. The ambitions the ambitions sometimes are harder to talk about than the problems.
That's right. That's right, because you're putting yourself out there. You're putting yourself at risk, right? When you talk about things that you strive to do, well, then you're on the line.
Right.
You're on the line. You have to. You're being watched. You're being tested. You know. You're being held to account now for achieving those things. And I think that's part of the gift that these groups you and I are forming give to people is this holding to account that the groups bring. You know, people can hold one another to account and they can push one another towards success, right?
Yeah.
So, that push-pull dynamic can be quite positive and something that we all find ourselves needing, at a different cadence, but everybody on a somewhat regular basis, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Drew, before we wrap things up here, I wanted to ask you, what is one thing? We talked about a lot of different things, and there's lots of value here, and people can take away many, many different things that they should start doing today in order to get somewhere for tomorrow. But what is, if you had to pick one thing that a small firm architect could do today to build a better business for tomorrow, what would you say?
Can I give you two things?
Yeah.
Find good people and ask them for help. That's one thing. And the other thing is identify a risky place to go that's aligned with an ambition that you have, and go there. Go there. Whatever that might be, I think it'll take people's architecture practices to a different and better place.
Yeah, the challenge has been presented. Are you going to accept that challenge? I agree with you. I think not only will it take you to a better place, it'll take you to a better mindset, because when you are going towards something that you think is better and something that will make the world a better place, your whole world transforms. And so that advice of sort of looking to the future and saying, well, what can I do and how do I get there? First of all, it'll take your mind off all the other stuff that's sort of eating away at our minds, right? And so it'll give us something to focus on that's positive and will make the world a better place. So thank you for reminding us about that, Drew. That's an important thing that we should be doing and great advice. Drew Lang is his name. You can learn all about him and his architecture. You should definitely go to his architecture firm's website, langarchitecture.com, langarchitecture.com. Beautiful website, beautiful architecture. Hudson Woods is there. You can go see all of the work that they've done over there. And if you want to learn more about Brick and Wonder or apply, brickandwonder.com. That's where you can find all the information about Brick and Wonder. He's on Instagram at Lang Architecture and Brick and Wonder, so go follow him there. Drew, this has really been a great conversation. I think we have a new friendship. I'm looking forward to talking to you again offline because I think that you and I have very similar missions and look at the world in very similar ways. So thank you for joining me here today at Entre Architect Podcast.
We are kindred spirits indeed. Thank you so much, Mark, for having me. Really appreciate it.
You are listening to episode 334 with Drew Lang of Brick and Wonder. So what did you think of this episode? I really want to know your thoughts. This is a request. Head over to the show notes at entrearchitect.com/episode334, entrearchitect.com/episode334, and share your thoughts. I want to know. Post them in the comments. Or post a review on iTunes or wherever else you are listening to this episode right now. Almost every platform has a place where you can share your thoughts with the world and with me, and I will read them. How am I doing? How am I doing lately? Do you like the guests that I've been inviting on the show recently? I'd like to know. What do you like? What don't you like? Don't hold back. If you don't like something, I want to know that too. This show is for you, and I want to serve you more of what you find most valuable. So I want you to let me know. And if you like Entre Architect Podcast, I want you to go visit our new home at Gable Media. There are several more shows, other shows that I think that you will love. Arcaspeak, Spaces Podcast, Build Your Brand, Troxel, Practice Disrupted, they are all there. We're all there at GableMedia.com. That's GableMedia.com. And there's more shows. There's more shows coming. We're developing some new stuff, some new content, both in video and audio. Some from names you know, and some from people who will probably soon become favorites on your playlist. Trust me. So if you are dedicated to building a better world like we are, then come join us at GableMedia.com. That's GableMedia.com. Be well, my friends. Be healthy, be happy, safe, and secure. Love, learn, and share what you know. Thanks for listening.